We back to talk about some Detroit real estate. We back to talk about some Detroit real estate. Because that's what we do. We decided to take an action, man. We take an action. That's the wrong flyer. Hopefully I have it on this one. And I got so much stuff on this phone that I had to get two phones. I got so much stuff on my phones, I had to get two phones. There it is. There it is. There it is, y'all. We live, man. The brother is going to be joining us very shortly. We're going to be talking about Detroit real estate because Detroit is the hottest market in the country. Detroit is the opportunity that a lot of us can get into. If you are struggling to get that down payment, if you're struggling to get that financing in your current market, Detroit is a great place to start. So let me see if I add him in, if it'll keep that flyer. Shout out to Divine Bliss in the building. Shout out to Divine Bliss, man. We working. This, I don't even know what day it is. I'm supposed to be going golfing, but you know what? The reason why I'm able to go all in like I am today is because yesterday I relaxed a little bit, and I know tomorrow I'm going to be relaxing. So we're going to make Thursday a hell of a day. Romeo, hit that damn button. It's probably going to mess up the stuff, though, because I got that picture in there. There we go. Man, Detroit Real Estate Podcast, we're in the building. What's going on, y'all? What's going on, Romeo? Tell the people who you are and where you're from.
Romeo Rowe, from Detroit, wholesaler and investor.
How long you lived in Detroit?
Build generational wealth. Amass a ton of units and be like this guy in the red Lacoste polo.
I had to switch up on him and I had to go Lacoste instead of Ralph. I've been wearing Ralph wearing long, man.
Man, you've been wearing a lot of Gucci and Fendi.
No, I like nice stuff. And you know what I realized? That stuff, the quality does really come through. It seems crazy, like to wear a shirt that costs $500, but it feels like a $500 shirt. These shirts feel like $500 shirts, man. Like,
you'd be having a different advice. You'd be like, one way to motivate yourself is to go get that Tesla.
And then what else did I say?
Give yourself that Tesla. Give yourself that house in Baldwin Hills and force yourself to make the payment.
You know, I don't know if I said all that, but I might have. I say,
that works for a select few.
I change my mind. Sometimes I say, go buy what you want. And then sometimes I say live lean and stay frugal. But, you know, frugal is subjective. Frugal is subjective. If you got six figures, seven figures in the bank, then $1,000 is not that much, especially if you can make that money in the stock market, especially if you can make that money on a flip. So frugal is subjective, man. Somebody came to me and they're like, oh, yeah, you make a bunch of money on dividends, but you invested a bunch of money. I was like, yeah, I bought a car, too. I could have bought an Aston Martin. I'd be riding around in that same $20 that I put into the stock market. So play me if you want to. What's going on, brother? What's new with Detroit these days?
The same old, man. I've been having quite a few challenges lately, but it's building my character.
What kind of challenges?
All type of challenges. Let me see. How do I word it? Sometimes it's harder to sell deals. When you're not buying, it's harder to sell the deal sometimes because the price of construction is so crazy. But on the other end, you can argue the price of the houses are constantly inclining as well. But some people will be like, well, the cost of materials is going up faster than the cost of houses. And then people are like trying to be a step ahead with mortgage, you know, interest rates increasing. So some people are like, I feel like it's hard to tell. People don't always tell you the reason behind their decisions, but it seems like some people, more than enough people, are like afraid of interest rates going up. So people are getting a little cautious.
You know what I think? I think that you have to dictate the market. I feel like, especially when you step into like a market like Detroit, you step into a market where it's kind of like the wild, wild west a little bit. Like Detroit, it's like there's no rules. You got folks running around doing stuff without permits, folks running around calling themselves GCs, folks running around who are GCs, who are making up these crazy astronomical numbers in terms of the rehab. And you got to dictate the market. Successful people don't take what comes. They create what they want to see. And so when I first got to Detroit, I'll never forget, we bought a property. It was a property part of an extensive rehab, and I contacted the contractor, and she told me that it was like a $100,000 rehab. I was like, I rebuked that number in the name of Jesus. I got that rehab done for $30,000. And so what I'm finding is these folks just be making shit up out their ass. And so when you walk into these properties, GCs are going to tell you it costs this much money, and contractors are going to tell you it costs this much money. I'll fire somebody so fast. One of the ways that I've been able to survive in Detroit is I don't just take what people are giving me. I'm always fighting on the numbers. I'm always push back on the numbers. I'm always finding a way. So much so that I went out there to do the work myself.
When it's a substantial rehab, they really just throw out anything. They like, what do you know? You're not a contractor. And how do you really argue? You won't know what the true cost is until you do the project. I mean, I get it, but.
And that's why you got to do projects. And so I think that on the outside, it might seem like you got to know it all, but you might lose some money in the beginning. And so I was watching a recent podcast, Truck and Hustle, and he was talking about how when they first got into the business, they got scammed and they lost a bunch of money. And being taken advantage of is going to tighten you up. A lot of people, they don't do stuff because they don't want to get taken advantage of. When unfortunately getting taken advantage of is kind of a rite of passage. I'll never hire another GC again. I will never hire another GC again. Why? Because I know that they're crooks. Unless I find somebody who's dope, I'll hire a project manager before I hire another GC. Because I know a GC is going to take whatever it's costing, and they're going to add it, they're going to double that price just because I'm out of state.
The thing about having a GC is, one, the GC makes the job expensive. And then unless your GC is a dog, you really need a project manager to that GC, because a lot of GCs have 6-7 projects and you don't have to be there all the time. They're doing a lot of checking in on 5, 6, 7, 8 projects. That's so true. They need somebody to micromanage them instead of you as the owner doing it. But then that's an additional cost to what you're already paying. So you getting upcharge on labor, you getting upcharge on materials by the GC, and then you got to pay somebody to manage that person. You know, nothing is free.
Right. But you know what I like to do with people is I like to train people, man. My goal is to find people who work and train them. So even in the sense of getting a project manager, I'm going to train you to be my property project manager. I'm not going to go out there and hire project managers, because folks just are out of touch with reality. I'm in the process of doing a podcast tour, and the number they quoted me versus the number that they sent me on the invoice are like night and day. And so me being the kind of guy I am, I'm like, I'll get my own peer space, get my own microphones, get my own stuff, and then we can just take all our equipment with us. I'll get a suitcase for the equipment. I'll carry the microphones and the lighting from location to location to location before I pay you a bunch of money to rent your stuff. And so basically what I'm saying is that, like, I feel like with Detroit, and this is for the people who are watching, with Detroit, you got to come in there with like a boss's mentality. Like, I'm not just taking what you're telling me, because they're going to try to pull one over on you, man. They're going to try to oversell the property on you. They're going to try to oversell the rehab on you. They're going to try to do whatever they can to squeeze it, because I believe, and maybe this is wrong, I believe that certain people operate with the scarcity mentality, meaning they think there's not enough clients out there, and so they try to make all their money off of one client. They try to make all their profit off of one person because they don't think they can get more clients. They don't think they can get more work, when really there's a ton of opportunity in Detroit. There's homes for days. There's no shortage of opportunities in Detroit. Granted, it's changed a lot since it did before, but now it looks a lot different. Well, so what I'll say is, like, now there's still opportunity there. If you go in there with the right eyes, you can still find opportunity in Detroit. Do you think there's still opportunity in Detroit?
Definitely. Like I said, I've just been having my challenges lately running into properties that need a lot of work. But, like, I'm always targeting the key areas. So, like, the areas I'm targeting are nice enough, so the purchase price might need a little bit of adjusting, but I'm never really targeting areas where there's no improvement, like past improvement, current and future improvement, like the North End one. I really wish you could have got a Euclid, but I'm like, people talking about, I don't like the area, I don't like the block. So I'm like, I usually don't do this, but because it's not really, everybody different. So it's a perspective thing. Like when I wholesale, my job, I feel like my job isn't to, it is to educate, but only to a certain extent, because, you know, that could be a full-time job. And I really want somebody who I don't have to educate, because the person that is familiar with the area already, you know what I mean? You don't have to do too much upselling. Like, that's the easier client, somebody that's already familiar with a neighborhood. When you're trying to really just educate, you know, people take a minute to absorb the information and to apply it. So it's like, even if you educate them on an area, boom, they might not pull the trigger. You know, they might still want to see other people do projects over there. So that's why I don't really like want to just flat out educate somebody on a neighborhood if they know nothing about it, because they don't really react when you want to, like when you got that first deal there, you know. But on the other end, depending on who you talk to, like my realtor friend, he'll be like, that's what I do as a realtor all the time. Like, so, you know, you shouldn't mind holding somebody's hand. So it's like it's a thin line. Or like we had two different guys in Cali who were capping about buying the property. And we had to walk. They said that they were pre-approved with hard money, which is a lie. So we literally had to walk them through and hold their hands on getting pre-approved for hard money, which isn't really like a difficult process, but when it requires them to do stuff on their end, and then you got to check back on with them, and it's been 2-3 days, and kind of find out they didn't do what they were supposed to, you know, end up being a lengthy process.
You know what I think? I think that you got to find a way to educate people that's seamless, automated, and that you only have to do less often. So you're not educating people on a one-to-one,
but yeah,
like a newsletter. You can create like an email list and tell people to subscribe to your email list. You can do those kind of things, which will allow you to be a resource to people, and they'll be sharing it. Put your picture on there, your contact information on there, and just blast that out to your buyer.
Exactly. Something that they can access at their leisure and learn it on their leisure. Then when they're ready, they come to me versus, did you look into that yet? Do you understand it? Because it's like, even when you provide the information to people, sometimes they're acting, other times they being honest, but they don't always like absorb the information the first or second time that you put it in front of them. So it's like you're trying to move forward and you find out that they miss a step. Then with like hard money, you know, they require reserves, and you know, they might give you 85% or 80% to purchase the property, then do 100% of the rehab, but that's just the purchase. You got to bring the other money to purchase it, and then you got to have the reserves to start the construction, which a lot of people don't know, because I didn't know that at first. Like, you can't just, they're not just going to loan you 90% of $100,000 purchase price. Like, you literally got to have money to start the first phase of construction, and then they reimburse you. So it's like, it's not that difficult. It's just really like certain steps. And then if you like me, we all learn like from the same sources, you know, YouTube and paying for courses and Instagram, but every now and then, the people that you watch might leave out a step or two, and it'll be like the most important step.
Right. Absolutely. But I think that one thing that I did learn from Rashana, she's very big on educating her customer base. But again, you don't want to be educating on a one-to-one. And I think the reason why you don't want to do it is because you know it's inefficient. You know that if I'm going to have this conversation with you, that's just like, I'm going to have that conversation with everybody. And I don't have enough time in the day to educate everybody that I run across. However, if you can educate one document one time, once a month, every other week, once a week, and then blast that out to everybody, man, I think that's a huge opportunity for you. I think that we have to find ways to add value to people that aren't as obvious as the things that we know work. So, for example, you get a buyer's list, you send people deals, you get sellers, and that's how you run a wholesaling business. But we have to reimagine that whole process. Where, what other ways can you add value? Can you create a podcast that talks about these kind of things? Can you create a little mini course where you're talking about the different opportunities that are in Detroit to buy real estate? So I think that, like, by doing that, and we're gonna work together on all this stuff, because I consider you a business partner. We're going to build out your wholesaling company into a multi-million dollar company, and we're going to do that through teamwork. You do what you do best. I do what I do. When it comes to you writing that newsletter, so be it. If it comes down to me getting it out to my email list and your email list and all that, so be it, because there are a lot of people who are interested in Detroit real estate. So in 30 seconds, can you sell people on the reason why they would want to invest in Detroit?
Yeah.
What's your sales pitch, man?
Oh, I mean, I thought it was just a yes or no answer. All right, 30 seconds. All right, boom. So within the inner city, they have over 15 neighborhoods which are getting millions of dollars worth of redevelopment in each neighborhood. That's one within the inner city. Then when you go close to downtown, they got other areas that are booming. Then you got other areas that are nowhere near booming, but they're close to downtown, and those areas are okay. Then you got areas close to downtown. First of all, Detroit is like one of the few major cities where you have an area close to downtown where you got to pull somebody's leg to invest in. That makes no sense. You can go downtown and see $400,000, $500,000 houses, and you go two blocks away, and you got properties that are in opportunity zones. And not only are they in opportunity zones, the values are like going up. So you got high rents. You got high rents. You got high values for when you resell the property, and you got low property taxes. So it's easy to cash flow, and it's close to downtown, and they constantly doing stuff in downtown. They bring sugar, the sugar factory. I just saw that they bring a Savage Fenty downtown. They bring a Gucci store. So that was over 30 seconds. But the main reason you invest in Detroit is because of the lower cost of entry compared to other major cities, and then location. I'll say location because if it's not the area, it's next to the area. It's just, if you go in Boston Edison, it's like seven other niche neighborhoods right by Boston Edison. If you go downtown, you're near Corktown. And another thing I just realized too, real estate is monopoly, obviously, but like anything, I feel like anything that was like significant at one point in time, especially like commercial property, if it was significant for like 30, 40 plus years, it will always be significant. Like, they have plans. Like people always say they take it forever to do this, they take it forever to do that. Man, these people got this stuff figured out 30, 40 years in advance. You want to know why? Because they about to renovate the old Tiger Stadium. They about to renovate other buildings. They could have renovated that stuff 10 years ago. Why are they doing it? Why are they finally doing it in 2022 or 2023? They wait for certain ducks to go align. You know, they wait for stuff to go in a row. So it's not that they overlooking it. They know that this place was significant for how many years and it was vacant for how many years. They know. They didn't forget that that land is just there. They wait. You know, it's they playing chess.
Right. But kind of like with the fairground situation. Like the fairground was sitting there for a long time. And then
who bought it? A big player. Magic.
Right.
Magic.
Who's from Michigan. Who knows? And what's interesting, what I always tell people, that what's interesting about Detroit is Detroit is a major city. It's kind of like any other major city. You have Dallas, you have Houston, you have Los Angeles, you have San Francisco. You have these notable cities that everybody knows about. And it's very unlikely that they're going to let a notable city just kind of fall off the map. And so what drew me to Detroit is the fact that they have all major sports teams. Literally, in the city of downtown, there's four major sports teams. They have a football team, a baseball team, a basketball team, and a hockey team. They bring a ton of talent to that area. Everything's been renovated and brand new. Everything is nice. Nice hotels, nice condo apartment complexes. And they're continuing to add more. Wayne State is down there, which is a massive university. And so, for me, I just saw the opportunity there. It just makes have the foresight to see what's not there before it is. As an investor, you have to be able to see what's going to potentially when it's there. A lot of people, they can spot the obvious. They can say, New York real estate is booming. But you know what's interesting is you're going to make more money buying the dip and buying opportunity than you will buying the top. And we're seeing that right now in the stock market. Everybody who bought the top in the stock market, they bought Zoom, they bought, what else? All these high-flying players who are making a bunch of money in tech, they're hurting right now. And the people who are buying real estate in Los Angeles at the top are going to hurt. And all that money continue to flow out of California, out of Florida, out of New York, into the Midwest, which is what we've been seeing. A lot of the investors, the people like Romeo work with, are from California. and they're investing there because either they're pulling their profits and reinvesting it into an opportunity, or they just have so much money because they live in these areas that they can afford to invest there and go in there massively. And so you have to think like an investor, not like in a consumer. A consumer buys what's sold to them. An investor buys what they think is going to eventually be selling. And so Detroit real estate, when we bought it, it wasn't looked at as an opportunity, but it was an opportunity. And so the opportunities a lot of times don't look like opportunities. You got to be out there scouting around. And then also, you might have to turn it into an opportunity. You might have to put your marketing behind it, your initiative behind it. I told we're going to change the narrative of Detroit. We are. We control a certain portion of media, whether it's through social media, through a podcast, through Twitter, through Instagram, through blogs, through YouTube, where we can reshape the narrative of our cities. We're going to reshape the narrative through repetition, by sharing the highlights, not just the lowlights, not just talking about who got shot and who got what. No, look at all these dope Black investors and developers who are making crazy moves that you never even hear about. There's a video on my page, scroll back. There's like 20 investors, Black developers,
who are doing
deals, hotels, apartments, all that stuff.
Not to cut you off, when I was selling that, I tried to get deep in my bag when I was trying to move that Euclid deal. I watched that address that you posted from Mike Duggan, and I start sending people articles. Like, I didn't even know it was that much development going on in the North End. I'm over there a lot. And then it's development that hasn't even occurred yet. And then that let alone that many Black developers. I'm sending it to people. I'm like, you said this is a bad neighborhood. They got a 20-unit senior citizen building being built in 6 months. They got 15 units over here. You know what I mean? I'm like, the North End? I mean, it's still dilapidated, but that's the thing. It's not even like you banking on future appreciation alone. Like, it's literally sales over there, first of all. Secondly, you got old houses getting renovated, selling for crazy prices. You got new construction selling for $300,000 and $400,000. You got a new construction on residential and commercial, senior citizen homes, just regular apartment buildings, condos, like. You got everything you can think of. It ain't just one sided.
Yeah.
It's close to downtown and it's an opportunity zone.
You can't really, and this is what's really important, is when you're an investor, you can't really go based off of what you see. And a lot of people, they drive through these neighborhoods, and if they can't see it, they think it's not happening. When they don't realize, like, there's plans in the work, there's people having meetings, there's documents being filed, there's people being contacted, phone calls being made, and money exchanging hands for things that aren't visible in the present, but will be there in the future. And so as an investor, you got to make moves based off of the future or based off of the near future, not based off of the home that you see boards on it. Cause you never know. We were at a house and there was boards on the window. They had a whole new renovation on the inside. Cause you really don't want to advertise that you're doing a whole new renovation.
Exactly. I've seen that a few times, many times. Like I told you, Holbrook, you love that block. It was three vacants outside of yours before I sold that to you. And it looked like they weren't working on any of them. Now two of them are done.
Right. I was next to two fixed up properties. Down that same street, there's two more fixed up properties. Because another thing that happens is as you start to do work, other people start to do work. So your development spires more development. So a lot of people won't go into a space unless they already see something happening, not realizing that they can be the catalyst for something happening. You can inspire greater things to happen with your action. Don't sit on the sidelines. You move, and then other people will move in line with you.
I told somebody, like, I can't just flat out talk junk about why people do what drives people's decisions. Because, I mean, I get it. People be scared, and it's, you got a lot of money invested, and you don't want to lose. But, like, sometimes you got to take that risk for one. Secondly, like when it comes to like comps, like, yes, for sure. That's one thing we need to do. I want to teach people how to run comps. A lot of these people don't know how to run comps.
That on the list of things we got to talk about.
Teach people how to run comps for one. Secondly, like one thing people don't understand is they don't know how to run comps, but then they live and die by the comps. So like in the North End, like over by Holbrook, you know, you see what the comps are now, 260, 270, 280. But when you were buying it, they were like 210, 220. Who's to say that that person made that house lovable? You know what I mean? Like, they probably did it up 85-90% because they were scared, like, all right, that's enough, that's enough. We're not about to do marble floors. We're not about to go above and beyond because my budget ain't for that, and I don't know if it's going to sell for more. So
I've seen
you got to have people that push the comps.
I've seen some rehabs, but you're right. You got to push those comps, set the tone, because it's a safe environment. We recently had a break-in, and the cops was there in like 10 minutes. I was impressed. I was like, look at y'all, cops. Usually y'all don't even respond. Now y'all doing work and stuff because they want to see the neighborhood improve as well. My uncle, he's in Atlanta, and he was saying that when they want to improve a community, they send their cops in to clean up the community. And that's one of the things that we're seeing in Detroit as well. Like, I can literally drive around Detroit and be a cop, but as soon as I turn Bagley, it's cops. As soon as you go into the areas they're trying to improve on purpose, it's cops. And that's a good thing. Cops protect your investment as well. For the people who don't know, what are the hot spots to invest in Detroit? Because we always talk about Detroit in the abstract, but there's certain neighborhoods that are better than others.
Like you say, we don't have a poverty mindset, so I don't mind sharing where the opportunities are because I'm going to get mine regardless. Russell Woods, Fitzgerald.
Abundance. Huh? I said abundance, my N-word.
Russell Woods, Fitzgerald, Bagley, Island View, if you can bet on appreciation and see the vision because it's still a little messed up over there. But they got more – that's near downtown. They got more money allocated to that area than – a lot of other ones. Martin Park, University District, Pingree Park, which is just north of Island View. Russell Woods, for sure. Boston Edison. Oh, man, my dog just jumped up on the couch. Boston Edison. Historic Atkinson District. Virginia Park. The North End. The New Center area, Corktown. I think it might be a little bit of Corktown. You might just want to buy land or buy some commercial stuff in Corktown. But Corktown is where the old Tiger Stadium is. That's real close to downtown. Southwest, which is just outside of Corktown. Southwest, man, you can. Southwest is like primarily Hispanic. So it's like the Hispanics live in a certain part of Southwest. The blacks live in a certain part of Southwest. But where Hispanics live is, you know, primarily them. And then it's nice over there. And it's near downtown. And that's where they want to live. Like, they don't even want to live in other cities in the Metro Detroit area. They literally want to live in Southwest Detroit. So, like, I've experienced a guy selling a duplex in Southwest that, it was in good shape, but it wasn't fully renovated. But since the Hispanics literally want to live in Southwest, they'll come and look at it. And they already know in their mind, like, I'm buying this, I'm paying cash. Like, this is the only neighborhood I'm really willing to live in.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a few other. East English Village, Morningside, which are both by Grosse Pointe. What's it called? Cornerstone Village.
What's interesting is, at one point in time, wasn't the case. It was everything was in downtown. Everything was in downtown, and everything surrounding downtown was still kind of like, Detroit. And what I think that is, as these other areas improve, because if those areas become nicer, higher values, people are going to go to places that they can still find a deal. And so this is why I've held on to a lot of the shells that we have and a lot of the land that we have. I have no desire to sell. The development's going to come to us. That's a part of investing, too. Sometimes you can just own some homes and you can buy some stuff in Detroit and just sit on it. It's like that, but you can sit on it. Granted, you can also do a little minor rehab and put a tenant in there with a tent under the mindset of just having them and make sure that it's maintained. And so I don't think that the cash flow in a lot of instances is the business of real estate. I think the business of real estate, when you're an investor, is the appreciation and the potential growth and the ability to ultimately sell more. Cash flow is a bonus. We went through a situation where we had the idea that appreciation was the bonus, but in Detroit, I think it's a little bit different because you're going to have higher construction costs, and so you don't want to do a full fancy rehab. You're going to have tenants that are going to be hard on the property, tenants that might leave the property ruined, tenants who aren't going to pay, so you don't want to have a bunch of money tied up in a property where they're not paying. And then you're also going to have people who just might not be good tenants in general. And so it's like, maybe I need to give you something that's clean, safe, functional, while I wait on the rest of Detroit to come back. And then as it comes back, then who knows what I can sell this house that I bought for $11,000. We bought a house for $11,000. The tenant pays us $725 in rent, which is low. We're raising that on them ASAP. But we wasn't always paying $725. When we first bought the house, she was paying $500. We inherited the tenant, and we've gradually increased it over time to $7. But now it's time to increase it again. So we need to do a market analysis, look at what the rents in the area are so that we can raise the rent. And then think about this. We bought this house for $11,000. We can rent it out for, let's say, $1,000 a month. We're making our money back every single year. And we've already made the money back because we just bought and we waited and we stayed patient. Opportunity in Detroit, you can't do that in California. It does not exist.
That's true, man. I was pulling all my tricks out the book when I was trying to sell Euclid, man. I'm like, people don't want to pay this price and put this into a two family. Then I get on Instagram. I mean, you can't compare cities, but I'm like, for a duplex in like DC, you paying like $500,000-$600,000. You're like, yeah, the rent is going to be a lot higher. It might be $4,000, $3,000 per side or something like that. But that the ROI still is not the same. And right. That's a lot more capital required. So
I would say that I would compare cities. We live in a global economy. There's people in the Mideast investing in Detroit. And I also saw a statistic that said about 50% of millennials are investing in real estate out of state because they can't afford to invest at home. I also saw an article that said that a better way to buy your home is instead of buying your home. When I bought my home, I put down a hefty, hefty, hefty down payment. I could have taken that down payment and bought 5 homes in Detroit and then use that income from the property or that I could use the income to pay for the property. I could use the appreciation to pay it off quick.
Yeah. So, yeah. Yeah, you can compare cities. And then people say you can't compare neighborhoods. I mean, when it comes to comps, no. But I think I just peep a lot of stuff that's not on paper. So, like, when rents increase and when property values go up, if the neighborhoods are somewhat similar or – when we in a appreciated market like now, you can tell that they pulling comps from other neighborhoods, or they not pulling comps, but it's people setting the standards in different areas. For example, when the rents increase because a lot of people during COVID weren't paying their rent, the price of a 3-bedroom rental went up, whether you were in 4219, 4235, you see what I'm saying? So basically, like, they changed the standard. Like, you're comparing different neighborhoods, but they went up everywhere. So everybody knows, like, now if you want a 3-bedroom, it's at least $1,100, $1,200. And that's the same thing. And then technically, on listings, you'll see the listing agent does that. They're not so concerned about the neighborhood as much. They'll be like, tell me where you can get a 3-bedroom for under $120,000. You know, so at that point, it's like, if you want a 3-bedroom, regardless of the area, you might have to pay X amount of dollars.
Word. So my goal for this podcast is to educate people on Detroit in terms of a few things. I want to educate them on the opportunity in terms of where to invest. I want to educate them on the strategy in terms of how to invest. I want to educate them on the resources available. I had a bunch of questions regarding the Detroit land bank, so we're going to be talking to Joe. I had a bunch of questions regarding lending is huge, talking to some lenders. And so not only are we going to have Romy and myself on here, we're also going to bring on some guests. We're also going to bring on some other investors. And we're going to blow Detroit up through media because I want you guys to be able to participate in the opportunity that is Detroit. If you guys want to work with somebody who understands Detroit, who has deals, who has opportunities, he just sent me one recently. I don't know what happened with that. Maybe we'll talk about that after I finish this kind of spiel. But if you guys are interested in finding somebody to work with, to find long distance real estate, to buy opportunities that make sense, that you can afford, that you can cash flow, that you can find some appreciation in without being priced out of your current market, Detroit is a great place to look. I've looked all across the country, y'all. I looked at investing in California. I looked at investing in Texas. I looked at investing in Georgia. I looked in the East Coast, like the Carolinas, Louisiana, all those areas, and Detroit just made sense. So where can they find you, man?
At humble_young_boss. And then my business page, which I'm definitely about to promote more, is at Roe Investment Partners. So ROWE Investment Partners.
We're going to make sure we upload this to YouTube. It's to the podcast app. And we're going to continue up this fire. My name is Charles Oglesby. Make sure you guys click the link in the bio. I will have the Log and Distance Real Estate Investing course inside of the link in the bio so you guys can check that out. People have asked where they can find it. I'm going to throw that inside the link in the bio, so make sure you check there. I have a special discounted price for the people who tapped into this live. So check out for that.
I got a question for you. Two questions. What's your one piece of advice for success in real estate and then success in Detroit real estate?
I'll say my one piece of advice for success in real estate is to maintain a level head. Don't get high on the highs and don't get too lows on the lows. It's very easy to get excited when you see certain things go well for you. And if you only celebrate when you have wins, then when you do run into a situation, we have a tenant, holdover tenant who's not paying rent, got to evict them, or you have tenants who have moved out or tenants who aren't paying, it's very easy to get frustrated. So I would just say, don't get too high on the highs, don't get too low on the lows. Just maintain a level head and understand that the unforeseen is going to happen. A lot of people who invest in real estate, they're like, okay, well, the tenants are going to pay on time, everything's going to be great, nothing's going to break. And if you come into it with that mindset, you're going to get frustrated and you're not going to last long. You're going to want to leave. Another thing is, make sure that you maintain reserves. Don't just see cash in your bank and just think that that's like an opportunity to spend money and start buying fancy stuff that you always wanted. You need to make sure that you have multiple months worth of rent set aside to take care of any unforeseen expenses like tax. I mean, taxes aren't, they're going to come. Taxes, a roof leak, electrical issues, plumbing issues, HVAC issues, pipes like to burst in Detroit. So you got to make sure you take care of that. And also, the more properties that you have, the more reserves that you have. If you have multiple properties, you need that same number of reserves, which is probably about 3 to 6 months worth of reserves per property. So it's not enough to have $3,000 to $6,000 for a portfolio of 10 homes.
You keep reserves in a separate account at your bank. Like, I know some people preach that.
I mean, I think that's a good idea, but I don't do that. But I think that's a good idea. Like in a savings account or even an investment account, like put that money to work, y'all. Take that money in the reserves and put it to work. A lot of people might say like, oh, a stock market's not liquid, or a stock market's not necessarily like an emergency account. Don't invest your emergency account. I don't know. I think that you could probably do that as long as you do it intelligently, like in maybe an index fund or maybe like a bond fund or something.
And then I actually thought about that because I got money in the reserves that I'm like, I need to put and get something, you know, get some type of interest on.
Right. So I would say that's an idea. And then also success in Detroit real estate is finding a good team and finding boots on the ground. You need somebody there who can be an extension of, because there's going to be things that are going to happen that you need to get somebody over to. And if you can't get that done, you're going to be up a creek. And so the way that you that you don't live in is you duplicate yourself. And so what you're going to do is you're going to find someone like Romeo, who's worked his boots on the ground for me before. He's done tenant showings. He's done all different kinds of things. You also need to find like maybe a mentor. When I first got into the space, what I did is I contacted somebody who was already successful in that space. I found somebody who owned 20 homes in Detroit, and I started just adding value and picking his brain. And so I'll never forget one of the first times I went to Detroit, probably the first time I went to Detroit, I just rode around and looked at his homes. We rode around, looked at his homes in Inkster. I asked him a bunch of questions. He looked at the first property that we bought and gave us his cosign on it, which I felt very comfortable moving forward if I got the cosign from a successful investor. And just networking. One of the things that I did when I first started is I called on a home once. I'll never forget. I called on a home. I wanted to buy the home. And I ended up talking to the dude. He was a brother. And I was asking him questions. And he's become a resource and a connection still today. He's been on my podcast. Let social media, I mean, a lot of people, there's two real estate groups on Facebook that I know of. One's called Detroit Real Estate Investing Group, and another's like Black Real Estate Investors in Detroit. So that's going to help you too, especially things. Also finding who not to work with, because a lot of times they'll post that in there too. They say, don't mess with this dude. He took my money and he ran off. And so I say that's like a few things that I would say that would help you be successful in real estate in general and successful in real estate in Detroit.
Yeah, like you said, that's the main thing is nobody wants to make mistakes. I mean, I don't mind making mistakes, but for sure, nobody wants to get burned. People don't want to lose money. You're going to lose money. I just lost some money recently, and it wasn't a significant amount, but the goal is to never lose. The goal is to make some good money on each transaction, or maybe not make a killing, but make something. So to lose, you know, that's like it's a punch to the gut. But you learn, and then, like, sometimes there's a lot of rules that you know, but sometimes you deviate from them or you got a lot going on. You can manage the stuff better, and then you look up and you let something slip through the cracks, and then now you, you know, not in the most ideal situation, but you're going to lose. I'm just telling you that. I don't want that to deter you, though, because, I mean, like, if you're educated, you're going to win way more than you lose. You're going to win more frequently than you lose, and then your gains are going to exceed your losses. So if you lose $1,000, you might have made $100,000 or $50,000 before then. So, you know what I mean? It is what it is. But, like, that can be a $1 million lesson. That loss can teach you what to do. So then next thing you know, you got a 20-unit apartment building.
Right.
One of the things not paying sometimes, that's a loss.
One of the things about business and investing is you actually don't have to win more times than you lose. You just got to make sure that when you do win, it's significant. And so I always give the example of VCs. VCs invest in 10 deals, and they know 5 of them are going to fail. And they know 3 of them are going to do okay. But 2 of them are going to be unicorns, and they're going to pay for all the losses plus more. So we've been conditioned to think that a loss sucks. We've been conditioned to think that if you're not batting 9 out of 10, that we suck. But that's not business. That's not investing. And that's what makes business a far superior job, is you don't got to be 100% right. Your project doesn't have to be 100% flawless. But on the job, they'll make you think that it has to be flawless, that your project and your property has to be flawless. And so think about that when you're thinking about being an investor. That's another thing. When we talk about having that investor mindset, it's knowing that you don't got to get it all right. Last week, I placed 3 trades. 2 of them failed. 1 of them succeeded. Of the 2 that failed, I might have lost $2,000. The one that succeeded, I made $23,000. I literally failed. If I would have turned 33% into the job, they would have said, get out of here. You suck. You're incompetent. You're not good enough to be here. We're taking back our little baby salary that we pay you. You got to be perfect on the job, but you do not have to be perfect in business or investing. So that should free you guys up and liberate you to know that the goal is just to swing the bat. You can be in the Hall of Fame hitting 300. You know what 300 means? That means you hit the ball 3 times out of 10 times at bat. You can be the best 3-point shooter in the world, and your free throw, and your you can be the best 3-point shooter in the world, and they're singing your praises, putting you on posters, giving you sneakers, and your 3-point percentage is 44%. That's less than half. That means for every shot you put up, you miss one. But the 3-point is so significant that that is still worth it. Investing and business ownership is so significant that you can make money and suck. You can make money. And that's why I'm not tripping off of this current flip. I'm like, all right, if I lose a little bit of money off of this current flip, I'll make it back in the next 10. I'll make it back on the next 10. And a lot of people never do that, one, because they don't want to lose money. And so they just go to their job where they're guaranteed to make money, but they're also guaranteed to be miserable, and they're also guaranteed to be broke. So a lot of people stay broke due to guarantees. A lot of people stay poor due to guarantees. And that's the wealth. There's people who would rather not grow out than become great because they just want that guaranteed easy check and easy food that the government gives them. They're like, I don't want to risk anything, so I'm not going to become great, but I'm also not going to thrive. I'm also not going to suffer. I'm also not going to go without. But you'll find that you'll do more when you put yourself against the wall than if you just sit there in your safe comfort and your safe leisure and don't do anything at all. My name is Charles Oglesby, also known as Todd Millionaire with Romeo Road. The goal is to bring these to you every Wednesday at 4 o'clock p.m. We're also going to drop this onto our podcast channel. We're also going to get this onto YouTube and continue to bring you guys this game, brother. Anything left you got to say to the people?
Just stay tuned in. Educate yourself. Continue to educate yourself the way you've been doing it. But tap in with us to give you a different spin on it. For us to give you a different spin on it. And we're going to provide a lot of different resources to you all. So streamline the process to tweak it. So if you didn't understand it from whoever your previous source was, we'll help you. And then, like he said, we're going to create a process in which we educating people, and it's not on a one-on-one basis. So it's like, you click this link, you pay for this course, or you go to this newsletter, or you do this, we'll break down to you what you've heard on YouTube. We'll break it down to you in a different way. So then you can come to us pre-approved or come to us with, you know, different things in the process. So you'll be ready to go and ready to shop with us. So you can know how to, you know, get your boots on the ground. Cause like you said, that's what you need. You need to be educated yourself, and then you need a team, and your team needs to be educated and reliable. So, you know, we can teach you how to educate yourself, and then we can teach you how to find a solid team and work with them and just rinse and repeat.
It's lit. With that, we up out of here. Peace.
Peace.